everyone, and welcome back to Murder in the North. I'm Kelby.
And I'm Zach.
And this week we're going to be talking about probably the most disturbing case that we have covered so far. And if you've been listening to our podcast for a while, you would know that we did not upload last week. If you're following our Instagram, I did post something on there just to like preface why. But this case was actually really difficult to not only listen to, but to research. And I honestly just needed a break. Zach and I have been really good with like boundaries regarding the podcast, and just this is a hobby. This is something that we enjoy, and we don't ever want to force an episode. So I felt like I just needed an extra week to kind of, you know, catch my bearings and to get all the information. So I'm going to do a preface before we get into it and just say that this episode is going to be talking about a lot of really difficult subject matter regarding murder, assault, and I'll try my best to kind of give trigger warnings before, but I just wanted to let everyone know that this is the most disturbing case we've covered. So if you don't like listening about murder or, you know, blood or anything like that, then maybe this is not the episode for you to listen to. Alrighty, so jumping into our case sources this week, we have a YouTube video by Fear Files, the Netflix series Don't Fuck With Cats, allthatsinteresting.com, oxygen.com, cbc.ca, and Wikipedia. Okay, so our case begins in Montreal, Quebec on May 29th, 2012.
Ooh.
And it's actually ironic because that is the day of my birthday, so kind of sucks, but it's just interesting seeing that. But anyway, so our case begins in Montreal, Quebec on May 29th, 2012, more specifically at 5720 Decarie Boulevard, Montreal. It's a Tuesday morning when janitor of an apartment building, Mike Nadeau, noticed an older-looking suitcase that to him appeared to be unusual. Mike noted that the suitcase had a lock on it, which intrigued him as it was an older suitcase and he was unsure why it might have been locked. As he approached the suitcase, he began to notice flies and maggots coming from the suitcase. Mike assumed it might have been a dead animal, like a cat or dog, and like perhaps the owners were unsure what to do, so they decided to like leave the suitcase there. So Mike took it upon himself to open the suitcase, and what he found was unimaginable.
Like, at that point, sorry to kind of jump right into it, I would have probably been calling the cops already, especially if I'm thinking, like, it might be, like, a dead animal or something. 100%, I'm getting right to the cops.
Yes, but at the same time, like, who knows, right?
Maybe yeah.
To him, because we see all the time that sometimes animals are just left, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah. Who really knows, right? We don't want to assume.
But locked inside of a suitcase, though. At that point, it wasn't put there by accident. Mm-hmm.
I think the way they described it, too, was maybe the owner didn't want to get in trouble or something. So like that, they thought that that was the best thing to do. Not that that is the best thing to do, but that's kind of how it was described.
For sure.
Okay, so Mike opened up the suitcase and what he found was unimaginable. In the suitcase was a torso of a man with no arms, legs, or head. The torso was also punctured in the abdomen several times. Mike did what any person would do and proceeded to reach out to authorities. Montreal police soon came on scene to investigate and proceeded to dig through other garbage bags that were left in hopes to find more evidence. During their search, police found a screwdriver that was painted a metal color, like a gray, modified to look like an ice pick. They found a knife with pieces of skin and blood, a handsaw, and additional body parts. Legs, arms, but no hands, no feet, and no head. Those parts were still missing. Police also found bloody blankets, a license, and papers belonging to the same individual as the name on the license. And that name was Luca Rocco Magnata. Police were happy with this as they thought they found the victim of this crime, and at this point, all they were missing was the suspect. On the same day, May 29th, the Conservative Party of Canada received a package, which if you're not familiar with the Conservative Party, it's just a political party that we have here in Canada. So they received a package that was opened by a staff member. The box contained pink silk paper, and wrapped within it was a left foot. Inside the box, a poem was left that read, "Roses are red, violets are blue, the police will need dental records to identify you, bitch."
What?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
So this was the ultimate look at me moment, and it was evident that this person did this for attention.
100%.
They knew that this would spark media attention, and that was exactly what they wanted. Police noticed on the box that was sent to the Conservative Party that there was a barcode, which they were able to trace to a Montreal post office. Police looked at camera footage and would also inquire about documentation to help identify the suspect, considering they could somewhat see what they looked like on camera. Staff informed police that the name associated to the package was Rocco. Staff also informed police that there were actually two packages listed to this name, not just the one. So at this point, police knew where one package was, but they had no idea where the other one was or could potentially show up.
Shouldn't, like, wouldn't the post office, like, be able to know, like, you'd think they'd be able to know, to be like, yeah, he shipped one here and one here.
You're gonna have to wait and see. The second package was actually intercepted on its way to the Liberal Party of Canada, which is another political party, and this package contained a left hand. Detectives thought to themselves, what kind of person could do this? And they began asking themselves, what could possibly happen next?
Yeah, at this point, like, you've had a left foot, I think it was, and a left hand pop up to two political parties. Like, what's going on? Like, why are you even sending it to them? Yeah. And, like, who else is going to get one?
Again, very much attention-seeking behavior.
Oh, yeah.
During this time, internet sleuth Deanna Thompson, which if you've seen Don't Fuck With Cats on Netflix, you'll know who this is, and John Green as well, because they were both in it. So Deanna is referred to as Body Movin', but I'm going to refer to her as Body. Her and John were online attempting to hunt down who they believed to be the suspect. Both of them were very confident that they knew who was the murderer, and that was because they both had a piece of the puzzle that the police did not. And that was an online video that was uploaded by the murderer to a website called bestgore.com. And this video is actually called One Lunatic, One Ice Pick. Are you familiar with that video? Or have you heard of it?
No, I haven't heard of it.
I had no idea either until before this.
I didn't even know that, like, that website was a thing.
So this video was uploaded on May 25th, 2012, which was 4 days before the torso was found in the suitcase. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. So I have not seen this video, and I don't want to. I've seen, like, bits and pieces because they show it on Netflix. But this is going to be a little bit of a trigger warning because it does get kind of gruesome. So on the Netflix show, it shows a video. And in this video, there's a lifeless body laying on the bed tied down. In this video, you can see another person walking over to that person on the bed and, like, grazing them, almost petting them. The body on the bed that's tied down does not move much, so it's difficult to tell if the person's alive or if they're dead or if they're unconscious. But it was actually confirmed that they were alive. I'll touch a bit more on that later, but the person goes off camera and comes back on camera with an object in their hand that looks like a screwdriver or an ice pick. It's gray and sharp. So I'm just going to do another trigger warning again. From here, the individual begins stabbing the body repeatedly over and over again, and it was estimated that it happened about 100 times.
Oh my God.
And it does not stop there. The person would then use a steak knife in an attempt to cut the body.
A steak knife to cut the body.
Yep, but would proceed to go get a handsaw to do this. In this video, there is a dog that is seen as well. It comes into frame barking. It's black and white, and I'll touch on that a bit later. Now, as if this cannot get any worse, this person would then begin doing very inappropriate actions to this deceased body. I'm not going to go into details, but it is online. It also was mentioned that there was signs of cannibalism, although that was not shown in the video.
So they just kind of noted on that, but, like,
after, yeah.
He didn't show that in the video that he had recorded, or they had recorded.
Yes. And remember, this video was recorded and posted online, and it ended up going viral.
That's insane.
Now, the reason I mentioned Body and John was because they really helped this case. And if you haven't seen the show on Netflix, I honestly couldn't finish it, but there's a lot of research out there that you can find. But they were definitely the backbone to this whole case, and it was really interesting to hear their side of everything. They were positive that they knew who this perpetrator was, and in fact, the two had been trying to locate him since 2010, after another video was posted of who they thought was the same person suffocating two kittens. It was a video that was posted with two cats, like two baby kittens, and it was very similar. He grazed them at the beginning, and trigger warning again, would put them in like this, the bag of a vacuum, and would suffocate them.
Oh my god.
Yes. So he murdered them, obviously. Yeah. Now, although this isn't enough evidence to solidify the murder, both Body and John attempted to get into contact with Montreal police to inform them of this video. Because, remember, the police did not know about this video.
Yeah.
To them, this body showed up, or this torso, and these packages start happening, but they had no idea about this video.
All they knew was that somebody was dead and body parts were popping up.
Yeah, exactly. So they're like, what's going to happen next? But they did not know about this video. So Body and John tried to get in contact with police, like I mentioned, but police never responded back to them. And it makes sense in a way because they're so focused on this case, and to them, they're not really seen as credible sources, right? So,
but if they, I can understand that.
Yes.
And like, it's hard because we're looking at it now going like, you should have listened, but like,
exactly,
it's tough because in some cases they don't have like, yeah, credible sources. But if you have somebody reaching out to you saying, there's
this video, we think we know who it is.
We think we may know who it is. This video was posted 4 days ago before these started popping up. Can you take, just look at it, essentially.
Right. No, I agree. And even in the show, they talk about this, like, had they just listened, but this was also the first time the police had really dealt with this, right? So to them, they're like trying to get this under control.
Seriously. And like, there's probably like literally no other cops in Canada that may have even dealt with anything similar to this.
Right. So during this time, while they're attempting to get in contact with authorities, police go to the apartment building belonging to Luca because the papers and the license they found in the garbage bags, that's the address that they went to. Police would search the apartment and noted that it smelled like chemicals, but they didn't have a warrant, so they were not able to do a complete investigation. However, they looked at the security cameras to see two individuals entering the apartment, one who was identified as Luca, and another male who they identified or suspected was Chinese.
Okay.
The video surveillance was not very good, so it was difficult to identify who the other person was, but as I said, two males could be seen entering the apartment building and entering his unit. At 2:47 a.m. on May 25th, Luca could be seen exiting his unit and bringing trash bags down to the dumpster. Luca could be seen bringing over 20 garbage bags to the dumpster and was also shown wearing the shirt that the other male wore entering the apartment.
What?
Yeah, it was a yellow shirt that the other individual wore. And when Luca came out and was seen on camera for the first time, he was wearing the yellow shirt. I'll do my best to post the videos on our Instagram at Murder in the North podcast, so you can see it there if you'd like. But alternatively, you can also YouTube it or whichever. Yeah,
or even on the, if it's on the Netflix.
Yes, they show it on Netflix, yeah. Police noted that this was weird as the time was 2 a.m. and most people are sleeping and don't spend this time carrying multiple garbage bags downstairs.
Well, and especially upwards of 20.
Yes. Luca was also caught on video at the post office, which I spoke about earlier, where he purchased boxes and mailing supplies. At this point, police were shocked as they initially thought the victim was Luca, but now they're like, where is this other male? And
now they're trying to figure out who that other male is.
And remember, police still did not know about the video that Luca posted, so they had no idea what exactly had happened. All they knew was two males went upstairs and one came out
wearing the other shirt.
Yeah. It was not until police were notified of a missing persons report that was reported by family and friends. The missing person was Jun Lin. Jun was a 33-year-old international undergrad student from Wuhan, China. In 2010, Jun moved to Montreal, Quebec, where he studied engineering and computer science at Concordia University. In the Netflix docuseries, Jun's friend Benjamin mentioned receiving a call from Jun's ex-partner inquiring if Benjamin had heard from Jun over the past few days, to which Benjamin said no. Jun Lin's ex-partner mentioned not having heard from Jun for about 60 hours, which was described as very unusual, as he is the type of person, if he was going somewhere, he would invite friends or like let them know. So Benjamin would actually go to Jun Lin's apartment and would get let in by the superintendent. Benjamin said that in Jun's apartment there was oil in a frying pan with eggs waiting to be fried, and that Jun's cat came out of the bedroom looking very hungry. Benjamin said that Jun thought of his cat as if it was his baby, so this was very unlike him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? To like leave your animal for that long.
Yeah.
That was not like Jun whatsoever. To the point that
it looks hungry.
Yes. So Benjamin would call police and said in the Netflix show that he started to feel like something was wrong.
Oh, 100% at that point.
At this point, police wondered if this missing person was connected to the murder, so police would actually take DNA from Jun Ling's toothbrush and water bottle. At this time, Benjamin was not told by police what was going on, but would actually hear about a gruesome murder video that had gone viral, and he was told that it was an Asian man who had died. So he actually found the video and glanced through it until the very end when the killer had the victim's head. And that was when Benjamin noted and identified that that was Jun Lin.
Oh my God. I couldn't even imagine.
Right? Like, this was kind of the part where I was like, I need to take a step back. And
yeah,
between understandable. This and seeing like parts of, well, hearing about the video and watching the video surveillance, I was like, this is too much. I just need time. It was.
Yeah.
It's heartbreaking, honestly. Could you imagine seeing your best friend literally be murdered and that video go viral?
No.
It's honestly disgusting.
Seriously. Yeah, it is.
So police went back to Luca's apartment to conduct a more thorough search. They used a chemical that reacts with blood, and Luca's bed, wall, and floor lit up like a Christmas tree. Blood could be seen going into the washroom as if a body was being dragged. Police would actually see the video that was posted and would be speechless. Not only did they just witness the murder, but it also helped them solve the puzzle. They just watched this man die and be brutally attacked, unable to defend himself. It's truly heartbreaking, and like I said, that's why I needed a break from the case. I could just not wrap my head around how someone could be so cruel and sick. Like, this is a person. Like, this person has a family and has a life, you know?
What goes through your head to be like, I'm going to do this to this person. I'm going to post it on the internet.
Yeah.
And
send it to Parliament. Like,
yeah.
This, Jun Lin was not treated as a person. And the fact that his family and friends had to see this, anyway, so it was at this point in the investigation when investigators recalled the song that was playing in the beginning of the video that Luca posted, One Lunatic, One Ice Pick. The song was True Faith by the band New Order. And this song was from the movie American Psycho, which the police did not think was a coincidence. I've never seen the movie, so I didn't really know. But
yeah, I've never seen it either.
So I guess this made police want to check the closet in the apartment, and to their surprise there was writing in it, and it said, if you don't like the reflection, don't look in the mirror, I don't care. Police described this as being part of a thriller movie. They also were nervous for him to reoffend, and they had no idea where Luca was
at that point. Like, you really don't know what to think. You don't know if he knows you're there. Yeah, it's
literally from a movie.
Seriously.
Yeah. And thinking it's 10 years ago that this happened.
Yeah.
So the video of the murder really assisted police a lot. as horrible as that sounds, they were able to see in the video a poster hanging above the bed that said, like, Casablanca. And, like, they were able to see, like, the blankets that they found in the garbage, like, everything, and they found the murder weapon, right? So, to them, they're like, this is just more evidence against him.
At this
point. Plus, he recorded it and posted it.
And at this point, you literally just need to find Luca.
Right. So, they actually thought that the Casablanca poster was providing some, like, context to where he might be. So, in the Netflix show, it spoke about how angry Boddy and John were because police, like I said, were not getting back to them. And little did police know how much information they actually had on Luca from when they initially saw him killing the cats.
Oh, right, yeah.
So, Boddy actually took a step back from the case. She talks about this in the Netflix show because it was too much for her and it was frustrating that she wasn't getting in touch with police. But she actually would go on Craigslist to see if there was any evidence on Luca. And to her surprise, she found an ad that was posted on May 24th by him. And this ad was posted looking for someone to engage in intercourse and bondage. The person who created this ad asked for someone to send photos because they were wanting to make a movie. And I know you're thinking, how can she confirm it was him? Because it doesn't say who it is. But
yeah.
She did so much research on him that she was able to pinpoint him on his grammar and the way he would write things. I guess his spelling was really bad. And he would like do two spaces in between certain words. It goes into more detail in like on the show.
Yeah.
This is just a few examples. But it was really mind-blowing to see how much information they were able to take.
I, like, really actually kind of want to watch this now.
It's intense, yeah.
Yeah.
Also, remember how I mentioned before that there was a black and white dog that was in the video?
Yeah.
That dog was also found dead. So she also thought that that symbolized something, like the dog. So she went on Craigslist as well and searched, like, an ad that said that someone wanted dogs.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And she found an ad for that as well.
Oh my God.
Saying that they were looking for a dog.
So he just like went onto Craigslist pretty much to look for somebody and a dog.
And I believe that was it. Like that happened. The dog one happened a few days before the murder.
Oh my God.
Yeah. On June 5th, 2012, a package containing a right foot was delivered to a school, and another package containing a right hand was sent to another school in Vancouver, British Columbia. It was confirmed that both packages were sent from Montreal. On June 13th, 2012, the four limbs and the torso were matched to Junlin's DNA samples that were provided from his family. On July 1st, his head was recovered at the edge of a small lake in Montreal's park after police received an anonymous tip.
You know, and as you're, like, mentioning, like, that, like, the schools had received them, I'm, like, starting to, like, recall the news, like, saying, like, a school happened to receive this. Like, I don't know why, like, now I kind of can, but, like, it's just, so like, weird. That, like, I feel like I've heard of this before.
You see, I didn't. I'm trying to think. 2012, we were going to high school.
Yeah, we would have been starting high school that year. Yeah.
So, I don't remember this at all.
That's, like, the only bit of detail that it's, like, that I kind of, like, I kind of remember hearing about this, but that's literally it.
So, it was concluded that there actually was a sedative found in Junlin's body. I might pronounce this wrong, but it's Oxyaman. I'm sorry, I probably said that wrong, but that helped explain why in the video his movements were so slow. It's because it was a sedative. And they assumed that that was from wine because a wine bottle was also recovered. And it was not confirmed whether he was alive during the time when Luca was cutting the body, but it was confirmed that he was alive when he was stabbed. So an arrest warrant for Luca was issued by Montreal police and later upgraded to a Canada-wide warrant by the RCMP, accusing him of first-degree murder, committing an indignity to a dead body, publishing obscene material, mailing obscene indecent, immoral material and criminally harassing Canadian Prime Minister Stephen Harper and several unnamed members of Parliament. On May 31st, 2012, Interpol issued a red notice for Luca at the request of Canadian authorities, and for several days before and after his arrest, his name and photo were displayed prominently at the top of the homepage of the Interpol website, which is quite large and like...
Yeah, like you really can't get like bigger than that.
Yeah, so there was a lot of information pertaining to how Luca was found, but I honestly don't want to give that any attention. Because yeah. I don't want it to seem like I'm glorifying him, because that's sure. the last thing that I want to do.
Yeah.
But what I will say was police found him in Berlin in an internet cafe where he was spotted reading news about himself. How much conceited can you be?
I'm sorry, but your ego is
yes.
huge.
Again, look at me attitude, right? Very attention-seeking. Yeah. And in the series on Netflix... You can see him on surveillance footage, literally walking by a mirror, stopping, looking at himself, fixing his hair, like checking himself out. After he just murdered someone.
Oh my God.
So in court, Luca showed no emotion, and a jury consisting of 12 people returned a verdict of guilty on all 5 counts. As I mentioned, first degree murder, committing an indignity to a dead body, publishing obscene material, mailing obscene, indecent, and immoral material, and criminally harassing Canadian Prime Minister Stephen Harper and several unnamed members of Parliament. He actually admitted to doing it, but pled not guilty due to mental illness.
Are you kidding me?
He was sentenced to life in prison with no possibility for parole for 25 years. That's just what we do in Canada, I guess. You don't get parole up to until after, like 25 years.
Yeah.
He's being held in Quebec in a high security prison. I saw an article that said that that Luca was going to try to take like the parliament to court or the federal government to court because he wanted to be moved to a medium security prison. But as far as I'm concerned, he deserves to rot in jail. So
yeah, there is no reason that he should be in a medium security jail.
After what he did, absolutely.
Seriously.
So Jun Lin's body was cremated on July 11th and his ashes were buried on July 26th in Montreal. Jun's father said that his dream was to own his own business in Canada, and now that dream will never come true. His father said, "I live each day with regret that all I now see available here will never be his, that his name will only be associated with a horrible, degrading crime. It causes me fresh pain to know that my son's legacy is to be remembered as a victim. He not only suffered in his murder, but he will be humiliated for each time his name is mentioned, and it hurts me deeply and will hurt me forever." And as if that wasn't enough, his family and friends had to sit during this trial and hear about like his son's sex life and relationships and trying to paint him like a... Like, he was the problem, you know what I mean? Like, he wasn't the victim.
And that's, like, the worst part about, like, these, when it goes to trial.
It's so traumatizing. Like, as if this wasn't enough.
We'll literally try and paint them to be the worst person.
Yeah, and it's...
Which, then, like, in this case, like, I don't know how a lawyer can represent him. Because this is a case that they're literally showing... Like, he... is almost promoting murder because he is recording it and posting it for everyone to see.
Yeah, there was, I saw a video actually by his lawyer, but again, I don't want to give him any more credit. This is what he wanted, right? He wanted his name published everywhere. He wants his photos everywhere. This is what he wants. So this is not for him. I want to make that very clear. This is for Jun Lin and his family because... At the end of the day, he was a victim, and it's just so sad that this happened. He was
a victim of a horrific crime.
Of a video that went viral. Like, how much more humiliating can that seriously. Be to him and the family? Like, come on. There was one thing that I did want to share. In Netflix's show, Body noted that she was watching one of Luca's YouTube videos. And as we've come to see, he's very conceited, has a very high ego. So she was looking at his YouTube channel because I guess he would often post collages of trips and stuff that he would go on. And she noticed a photo that really stood out to her, and she didn't know where that photo was from. So she thought maybe this could show where the crime happened. You know what I mean? Because again, the video was posted on the 25th.
Yeah.
They found the body on the 29th. That's mm-hmm. 4 days.
Yeah.
So she thought maybe this is significant evidence, whichever. So the photo that they saw, it had trees in the background that were sprouting, which was evidence that it was recent, alongside black traffic lights and a staircase. So she actually searched what a Canadian traffic light looked like and noticed that majority of the ones in Canada are yellow.
Mm-hmm.
When they were conducting their search, they came across a black traffic light. And in the description, like, you know, when you click on like a Google image and it will bring it up and it'll kind of have a small blurb at the bottom.
Yeah.
It said that it was in Montreal. So she confirmed this with another search, which helped them solidify that the traffic lights in Montreal were actually black and not yellow. They would actually open up Google Maps and drop the little person icon to go through street to street to find and pinpoint his exact location. And they concluded that this photo was taken at McGill University in Montreal. So had police answered, they could have saved Jenlyn.
Seriously.
And I don't want this to come off like, you know what I mean? Blaming the police because
in the end, like,
they did what they could, but
they were doing their job. And like, realistically, like, being in a case that you're in a very like stressful situation and you're being contacted by people that just say that they have information.
And they were getting a lot of false leads during this time as well.
Yeah, so like,
and copycats.
And almost in that case, like, you almost think like they might just be turning off the tip line and just not even paying attention to it anymore. Right. Because they're getting so many false information that comes in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that is the case on Jenlyn. And again, there might have been parts in here that I might have missed. I know I didn't add every single detail, but that was for a variety of reasons. If you want to watch it further, you can watch it on Netflix, do your own research. But for my own mental health, this is all I wanted to include because, as you have heard, it's a very, very horrific case. And I don't want to shine light on Luca because he does not deserve that.
He doesn't, that is for sure.
But with that being said, that is the end of our case this week. Thank you, everyone, for listening. If you're not following us on our Instagram or our TikTok, you can follow us at Murder in the North Podcast for both. That way you'll also see if we don't do an episode 1 week instead of just not seeing an episode. But did you have anything you wanted to add?
No, I think I'm good.
Okay. Well, thank you everyone for taking the time to listen. I know we say it all the time, but we're very appreciative. We will see you all on Tuesday. Stay safe.